Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted that Thomas Lux, a poet in the most profound sense, is our guest. I have the sense, as I'm thinking my way toward talking with you, Thomas, that life is full of poetic moments. And what you have done that I haven't done is to turn those into something that can be shared. Is that right?
Well, I think poetry is everywhere. It isn't just doesn't just begin or live in some kind of sublime state of mind. The world is full of poetic moments. But if you want to turn that into a poem, then you have to, that's when you start sweating. That's when you start working. That's when it becomes a process of trial and error and discovery and most often failure. But it's a process. I don't think I've ever written anything. I'll read you a little poem now that I know I did at least 20 drafts on and very likely more. Poems just never just happen for me. They have to be made, and usually fairly gradually. Let me read this little poem called The Bandage Factory. It's spoken by a guy who works in a bandage factory. I'm trying to create a sense of a metaphor here for our world, I believe. The Bandage Factory. Our bandage factory's busy. Boxcar after boxcar of gauze-only trains empty at the east side unloading dock. The women wash and fold and sterilize. The men make the big looms boom in the bandage room. And the boys and girls, when we're busy, no one goes to school, stack and sweep and gather scraps that we ship downstate to the babies and children's bandage works. On the west side loading dock at 5 o'clock, when we fill the whole train, we like to stand there while it pulls away. Some of the children wave and watch our bandages go out into the world where the wounds reside, which they were made to dress. Now, there's all sorts of rhymes in there. They're mostly internal rhymes. Sometimes I pile them up quite heavily, the room, boom, loom. I'm trying to repeat that sound deliberately, the ooh, ooh sound.
And yet what I hear is a story.
It is a story. It's a story of these people in the world that they live in. Their bandage factory is busy. We have to have more bandages now because there's more wounds in the world. And it's so busy, in fact, that the kids even, if you're a farmer, you can't, a kid growing up on a farm, you got to skip school at harvest time to help bring in the crops. Kids in this bandage factory town, when there a lot of bandages are needed, they don't even go to school. They can't go to school. And they send these things out into the world hoping that they'll, create some kind of possibility of healing, etc. Maybe this poem is about poetry. I'm not quite sure, but it is a story. I want my poems to be stories, more or less with beginning, middle, and ends. Don't always have to be in that order, but
that would be so predictable. There's a perspective that is the artist in our communities, the true artist. One of their important virtues is as over the horizon radar, the ability to not even see so much as to intuit.
Yeah.
Things that we, that the news isn't going to cover, that we walk around mortals are not even aware of, or only distantly aware of, and certainly have not articulated.
Well, I'd like to think that poets, I think Pound said poets are the antenna of the race, antennae of the race, and I'd like to think that, but I also don't. I mean, poets are just regular people too. They just get up and put their pants on every morning, just like everybody else. And the idea of the poet as somehow being living in this nether world and in touch with the spheres and stuff like that makes me a little nervous too. As much as the stereotype of the poet who you know, doesn't work, that the poem just comes down the poet's arm, has only to do with inspiration. The poet is merely the vessel through which the poem passes.
You don't buy that.
No.
You're not channeling a muse.
No. No, I'm working for the muse. If there is any such thing as the muse, then I am the servant of that muse. What I want to be is a servant to language, and never have the arrogance to consider myself a master of language. I want to be a good servant to language.
You have your book open. Do you have something else you want me to hear?
This is another short poem, and it's called Regarding Most Songs. I have in the title most in parentheses. But lots of times people will try to tell you that song lyrics are poems. In fact, they're not. They're song lyrics. Songs are sung, poems are read. And this has an epigraph from Joseph Addison, which is a 17th, early 18th century writer. And he says, "Whatever is too stupid to say can be sung." So it's a poem making fun of that notion that poems are songs, but it's also a poem praising music, the necessity of music. The human voice can sing a vowel to break your heart. It trills a string of banal words, but your blood jumps regardless. You don't care about the world's words, but only how they're sung and the music behind, the brass, the drums. Oh, the primal, necessary drums behind the words so dumb. That power, the bang and the boom and again the bang, we cannot, need not live without, nor without other means to make sweet noise, the guitar or violin, the things that sing the plaintive, joyful sounds. Which is why I like songs best when I can't hear the words, or better still, when there are no words at all. It's just a poem making fun of the banality of song lyrics and the argument that songs are poems or songwriters are poets. It's two different crafts, as different as a baseball player and a hockey player, different things.
I have a question I've wanted all my life to ask of a poet, and here's my chance. When I read your poetry and other poetry that calls to me, and you have called me back to poetry, you did it, it's so personal. I cannot, and many poets, not that I've met many, are shy people. How can people who are deeply introspective and quite protective of their place in the world, how can one be so exposing of oneself in poetry? I just can't imagine being willing to let the world into myself the way you do.
I don't know, and I don't do that as much as some poets, because I rarely write directly autobiographically. And that is the dominant mode of poetry today, is a directly autobiographical poem. The poet has an experience, writes a poem about it. I rarely do that. I believe I reveal who I am and what I love and what I fear and what I hate and what troubles me and what I quarrel with in my poems, but they are rarely directly autobiographical. So in my, there's a whole group of poets called the confessional poets, and poets who put all sorts of unbelievably personal things in their poems. I was just reading a poem by a poet I really like. I won't say her name, but where she's examining her anus in a mirror in a hotel room. And I mean, subjects of poetry can be everywhere, but that seemed to me to be going a little too far. That's something I would never do myself, but more power to the poet who did that. But
the sense of the revelatory, if that's a word, one can choose how much and how little.
Sure. I'm uneasy with the merely autobiographical, the merely personal. A lot of times people write thinking that sincerity alone is enough, or that they're telling some kind of truth, that they're right in some way is enough. Sincerity, in the normal sense of the word, not just being honest, is one of the deadliest things for a poet, or worrying about sincerity.
Why is that?
Because we can very often get wrapped up in believing that if we believe something, if we are sincere about it, that automatically makes it moving or interesting or true to a reader. and that's an easy trap to fall into. This is good because I'm being honest. It just depends on how that honesty is written that's going to make it a good poem or not. It's very easy. There's millions of sincere people, deeply sincere people on the planet. Not all of them are poets.
You obviously care deeply about language.
Sure.
You have a poem called The Language Animal, which is sort of a... You're almost making... It seems, based on what you're saying, that you're almost making light fun of yourself.
I find myself laughing in pleasure on The Language Animal.
But I'm interested in that commitment. Why does it matter?
That's a good question. Why does it matter? I think poetry can make us all a little bit more human, a little bit more alive, and maybe a little bit less alone. That's one of the connections you make in poetry. You read something and you realize, wait a minute, I'm not the only person on the planet who feels or thinks this way. There's something about good poetry that just spikes up the blood level, the heat in our bodies, makes our hearts beat faster, just makes us a little more alive. All good art does that. That's why art exists. All kinds of good art will do that.
This artist is Thomas Lux, the poet. We'll be back, Bill Russell and I, with Mr. Lux in just a moment.